I got a message from our friend Dean, and he texted me and said, "Hey, Anjali, are you okay to meet a friend of mine who seems to be towards the end of his life? And I just thought maybe you'll be the best person to speak to him." So he then forwarded this article that was published on the 14th of November 2023. It was a Tuesday. And I remember reading this article and was very impressed by what was written in this article by this guy. So immediately he linked me up and I set an appointment to meet Wee Jim. So Wee Jim is actually currently suffering from motor neuron disease. In his article, he was told that his prognosis was probably about 2 to 5 years, but he felt that his prognosis, even though the doctor has said probably a year, but I guess he wants to really fight it and then to outlive his prognosis. So in this article, he talks about how his wife, who has passed away, has also left his daughter, their daughter together, with a lot of emotional wounds. So in the article, he talked about his wife being diagnosed with cancer at the age where their daughter is only 1 year old. As I go through, there was also a picture of what are the artifacts or the letters that the wife has done for the daughter. And I was very touched by this move because his wife has since passed. But for her to be in that state of mind to do that really reminds me of what I'm doing for my daughter as well. And I just felt there was this renaissance of, wow, this connection with the wife instantly as a mother, that we really think 10 steps ahead. And there you go. Up next, it will be the podcast that I have with Wee Jim.
Hi, I'm Anjali May, and I'm dying to meet you. Your wife, just so that the audience understand, because I remember when you shared with me last week, your wife was diagnosed when your daughter is only 1 year old.
Yes.
And she sort of go through that, that illness for at least, she fought 6 years.
6 years.
Yeah. So maybe you can walk us through the journey, because I think losing a life partner is never easy. But let's backtrack a bit more. How do you meet your wife?
How do I meet my wife?
Yes.
So that year was 1994, if I'm not wrong. A bit fuzzy now, 1994, when you were probably like 2 years old.
No, I'm not, but thank you.
We were both studying in Japan on the Japanese government or Mombucho scholarship. She was from Hong Kong, I from Singapore. And we found ourselves in the same Japanese school in Tokyo. So we were studying Japanese language. Her Japanese was far better than mine because she had some basic knowledge. And we were preparing for university. So the idea is that, you know, you have 1 year of Japanese language studies and they'll then pack you off to university. She was obviously the far more accomplished of the pairing. She went to Tokyo University and I ended up in Osaka University.
Oh, so you have a bit of a long distance
relationship.
Oh, I see.
For about 4 years.
Oh, yeah. Wow. But you will meet, at least it's still in the same country.
Yeah, we met.
Yeah.
I go to Tokyo, she'll come to Osaka.
Oh, wow.
We travel. I remember we went to Australia, we did Europe, because she did her high school in Italy. So we visited her friend in Brussels, I still remember. We went to the US, we did Florida, all that. It was a shame we didn't travel as much in Japan.
Yeah. But I think between the two of you, you speak what, 6 languages?
I don't know. There's English, Singlish,
Mandarin, Japanese. Yes. 5. Italian, does she speak Italian?
Yeah, she used to speak a little bit of Italian.
Oh, wow.
I'm Teochew-nang,
so Teochew,
a little bit of Hokkien.
At what age did you both decide to settle down? 19.
Oh, right. We met at 19.
Oh, you met at 19?
Yeah.
So then you've settled in Singapore after?
She came to Singapore after much persuasion. And we bought our 3-room flat in Ghim Moh, I think it was 2003 or 2002.
I see. see.
And that was sort of the start of the chair. Yeah. Her life in Singapore.
And then it was only what, in 20, so your daughter was one, right? When
yes, so that was 2007. We came back from Norway. I was doing my postgraduate studies there. And at the end of 2007, she found that she had, I think at that time, stage 3 breast cancer already. Yeah. So I took no pay leave and spent some time, the whole, I think 6 to 8 months of a chemo cycle. Spent time with Min, my daughter, and my wife. We sort of journeyed together.
But was she got better? I mean,
It was brief remission.
Okay.
But after that, it was downhill.
So, you know, when you saw what your wife did, how did it make you feel? Or what do you think about her method of P.S. I Love You? So for those people who haven't watched the movie P.S. I Love You, this movie featured Gerard Butler, where he was coming to the end of his life. But of course, the show didn't turn, I mean, it didn't start with him. It actually started with his funeral. And then it shows his wife was trying to get over, you know, her husband's passing, but Gerard Butler in the movie has left a lot of messages to help her through her grief journey. So I thought that was a very inspirational piece. And I thought that book that, you know, your wife has handwritten a note for her that was very, really, really apt.
It's amazing. She was really, my wife was really ahead of her time. And you would think of legacy leaving as the realm of the rich and famous, you know, someone important, and you know, monuments and estates, multi-million dollar kind of things.
Yes.
But really, I think legacy is what all of us, as normal human beings, will leave behind. And sometimes it's also how we subconsciously leave a legacy behind. I'm probably medically at the final stage of my life. It may not look this way. I've been battling motor neuron disease for about a year or so. Prognosis is not great. Maybe I'm halfway through my journey, which gives me another 365 days perhaps, or less, or more. Nobody knows. And I ask myself if I'm capable of doing what my wife did, to leave such precious notes for my daughter, with me as a sort of, at the side watching, right? I'm not sure if I'm capable. I think it took a lot out of her, because it meant, if I can remember correctly, it meant acceptance that life was about to come to an end for her. And at the same time, it was a little bit of my tulia, right? You only have that last spurt of time, of energy left. I'm in a sort of same frame of mind, perhaps, right now. But ironically, thanks to my late wife, after she passed on, it became abundantly clear to me that life is fragile. We're all on this transient earth. If and when God decides that, you know, it's time, your time is up, and that's it. And so right from, I would say maybe after the funeral, that was in October, November 2013, I started to relook the way I live my life. Obviously then I was well, physically. And one of the things that I decided to do was to explore the world with my daughter.
Okay.
So I took her on, I would like to think some of the most amazing trips. We went to different parts of South Africa for wildlife watching. Similarly, went to Zimbabwe, Kenya, Botswana twice. We went to the Arctic Circle to look for polar bears. East Malaysia, orangutans, grizzly bears in British Columbia, kayaked in mangrove swamps of Langkawi, Australian outback, Galapagos Islands. Although then I didn't have the word legacy in mind, but I really felt that it was important to live each day to the fullest as far as possible. Knowing that, you know, God may just decide that you will no longer have a tomorrow, a next year, this will be your last Christmas, your last Sunday on earth, right? And it was really, really precious. Of course, I did all the things that you would approve of, will writing, etc., so on and so forth. And in fact, told my 8-year-old daughter, quite cruelly perhaps, that this is my will. Should I die prematurely, go to the cupboard, open it, look at the list of numbers, and call everyone on them. Can call every single number on that list. It, as you can imagine, it was not an easy conversation to have with an 8-year-old. And really, I look from my daughter's perspective, how is it like being her? And now, being in this position of a repeat of history, right? Deja vu. It just pains me.
When you knew you give up your work and to take care of your kid who's only, your daughter who's only one, and then your wife who's not well, what did that journey brought you as well?
It was 10 years ago, and you tend to remember the good stuff, right?
Of course, yes. We all do.
First of all, it was great to let go of the work part, because that's the easiest, right? And just have the bandwidth, mental, physical capacity to concentrate on what's important. My wife and I, we lived our life believing that we should live our life beneath our means. So we saved up quite a bit. Our first flat was a 3-room HDB flat in Ghim Moh.
Yes.
Even though we could afford something better. I didn't buy a car. Never have. No regrets.
Yeah, man.
So there was at least a financial buffer for me to make. It made the decision quite simple. And for me at the time, I didn't feel I had the capacity to hold on to a full-time job, and then the home front, and yeah, Min was just still very young, and yay, right, being jobless for a couple of months. And one of the things I just remember, one of the things that my wife and I later on, she's amazing. She's the ideas kind of person, right? Mm-hmm. So she got onto eBay. And she looked around the home and sold everything from branded good paper bags. Like Gucci or LV. Was it LV? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Anybody with branded
logo. People will buy.
They'll buy. People bought. Milk bottles. I think we sent milk bottles to Sarawak, and I had those like memorabilia from planes, like KLM, and porcelain things. We just sold everything that we thought we didn't need. It was quite fun. It brought the family together. I remember her saying that, well, it actually feels quite nice to always have some spare change in the wallet from all these transactions, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Coming back, because you briefly mentioned about your condition,
yeah,
and you also said that just a year plus ago you were climbing a mountain in Japan,
yeah,
right? So how did that news came to you?
Yeah, these great question. I mean, these 365 days ago and my state now, huge difference. So I still run my own consulting firm on paper. So I was in Bhutan last year in November, December, doing some work for the civil service. I was in my free time climbing mountains, picking up trash on the mountains. Remember this huge black trash bag that I moved from one end of the mountain to the other. You know, there was tons of rubbish, believe it or not, in Bhutan to pick up. I felt I was at the peak of my fitness. I went to the gym, I did yoga, I walked so much. I could walk like from where I live to in Singapore to Changi Village, to Jurong Lake Gardens, you know, 4 hours. That was the COVID days, right? Not a problem. And now, today, as you can see, my arms are flailing. I can't lift a cup. I walk maybe 100, 200 meters, I get breathless. I need help getting up from seats. I need help with toileting, bathing, and increasingly eating as well. It's a huge difference, huge difference, which has been, still is, very, very hard to accept.
Yeah, I reckon so. I mean, when did you discover? Did it hit you one day, you woke up?
Yeah, the nature of the disease is such that it's progressive. So it's a bit insidious, you know. You like, wake up one day and found out that, all the little changes that you experienced in the past actually amounted to something huge. So I give you an example. Last year, around this time, or even before, a couple of months before that, I started to experience strange things happening to my body.
Okay.
You know, when I sleep, I will have muscle twitching all over. It felt like electric currents running through my entire body. When I was in Bhutan, I couldn't put my hand into a glove. My palm just froze up. Later on, when I went to Oman for my other gig, I couldn't button my shirt. I couldn't put on a tie. Holding a mic in front of a class became heavy. And I was supposed to be this quite lean and fit and, you know, can handle weights kind of guy, right? And that felt really odd. I was taking some food from the buffet line and I lost control over the bowl that I was taking. People who hadn't seen me for some time said, "Hey, you've lost quite a bit of weight. Is it deliberate?" And I always had some excuse. You know, it was either too cold, I was tired.
Eating well.
I'm sure it'll be nothing. And one of the largest indicators, most obvious indicator, was the amount of weight that I could and could not handle in the gym. It had come down really drastically. But in my mind, it was like, okay, so this old uncle is getting older. Big deal, right? And I'm not going, it's not like I'm competing.
Yeah.
So all these little signs, you take them in totality. And I decided in January that I would go to the polyclinic to just have a checkup. I'm sure it's nothing. And so that began the whole series of events. And I don't know whether it's confirmation bias or not. It also coincided with the physical, a more obvious physical degradation. I lost a lot more muscle bulk, the use of my hands, from being able to lift like heavy dumbbells to I can't even lift my bag.
You lift your bag?
Yeah, just the ankle movement, right?
Yeah.
Which is really, really strange. And this was earlier in the year, it was like February.
Mm.
And I remember trying to show the doctor, you know, you may not believe me, but I'm really trying really hard to do this bicep curl movement to lift my back, and I can't. I don't know what's going on.
Mm.
So they did tests, etc. And very soon, I found myself with the diagnosis, motor neuron disease.
And there's still no cure for this?
Medically, there's no cure for motor neuron disease. I've exhausted all my medical options. And the medicine which I have been, by the way, $20 a pop twice a day, pills, and then IV infusion, roughly 2 weeks, 10 days each month, bills. You can imagine the medical bills, right? Thank God for insurance.
Yeah, see, thank God for insurance. Please bear that in mind.
Yes, yes. Had I not have any insurance, yeah.
It will be a different situation.
And remind me to come back to you that to say that actually when I retired from my previous job,
sure.
I left the public service after about 20 years. I pared down my insurance coverage, which was a huge, huge mistake. Because I felt I could no longer afford the premiums. And also, hey, I felt great.
Yeah.
I felt I was at the peak of my fitness. And I thought, well, maybe, I don't need lah, we save a little bit, right? Yeah, so that was not a very bright, that was not a very smart move on my part.
Yeah, anyway. I often say to a lot of people that insurance, I know some people may say, yeah, insurance pian lang eh, you know, insurance are all a fraud or a scam. But I have met so many clients who share with me, thank God for insurance, and I also have met individual who share, oh God, I wish I had insurance. And I think the misconception is always, oh, when I'm working, you know, I have a job, my company pays for the insurance, and I
They're not
often,
transferable.
Yeah,
right?
It's not transferable, yeah. Exactly. So for you people who keep commonly thinking, oh, don't worry, I have my corporate insurance, it's not transferable. So when you change job, it doesn't come together with you. It's not portable. So what you need is really get your own insurance the minute you are able to. Because a lot of times people say, oh, I will wait until I change job, then I consider. I said, premium will be different.
Yeah.
Your health condition will be different. So the best thing to do is while you're still able and you're healthy, get yourself insured. So please get yourself insured. You know, if you don't know, reach out to a financial advisor. There's many out there today. Yeah. So
And you also reminded me, sorry to sort of interject,
no problem.
That my wife, as a result of the insurance policies that she bought, she left a certain sum of money, which I took to invest.
Mm.
And to this date, gives like, you know, monthly coupons, which I'm then given to my daughter because that money was meant for my daughter.
Sure.
So it is also a very real thing to leave insurance as your legacy, and my daughter sees it every month in a bank account that this was, and I made it very clear to her, but she knows that every month mommy's money is in my bank.
Oh wow, you see, that's an act of love, but that's really nice. I mean, your wife was the planner, so
yeah, she was a complete planner. She's the type that goes to the supermarket with a shopping list, right? And when she couldn't trust the husband enough to take the daughter to Hong Kong alone because she was already in Hong Kong, right?
Okay, okay.
She would give me a list of, here are the things to that she can and cannot eat on the plane.
Oh, wow.
No juice, underline, no juice.
No juice, wow.
Cold,
okay.
Right, or whatever.
So cute.
But it's also, I think a lot of it, my wife was very sensible, and I think that was also our life philosophy, that we made trade-offs. So small home meant a little bit more income to get insurance, traveling, eat a little better, no car, you know.
I think
make trade-offs.
Yeah, exactly.
Live beneath our means.
Singapore is really convenient, unless you need a work, you know, like traveling from one place. Otherwise, public transport really works well. And I also stay in HDB. I believe in the same concept as you. I rather invest in experience.
Yes. Right?
So yes. I think experience is something that you can't buy. Yeah. So I think legacy.
Time is the most important and precious
commodity.
Commodity that we have, right? And it's limited. It's finite.
Exactly. So for your condition, I mean, knowing your prognosis, how are you keeping up with that news and also your outlook of life? I mean, this could be not easy, I reckon.
Yeah. Very, very cui.
Cui.
Broken.
Broken. Yeah.
But it's humbling to know at the back of your mind that the dotted finishing line, I would say, the transient journey on Earth is probably nearer for me than many other people. And that also drives a certain kind of behavior in that you prioritize, right? Prioritize. Prioritization becomes really, really acute. Which are the things that you need to spend more time on? And obviously, I'm not taking any more and more work assignments, not that I physically can. So again, back to the point where, you know, thank God for insurance, thank God for savings, etc. That even though I'm running my own company and depending on that to put food on the table, right, it became very clear that work wasn't the number one, right? Try and get my treatment in order, spend time with people who matter. I like to think of it as the long goodbye.
Lots
of meetups. So one of the things that was amazing, such a huge blessing in my journey, is that you lose some, you gain some. So in this season of physical losses, I have gained a lot in relationships renewed, new relationships like this, and people who really bother to set aside the time, sit down with you, hear me lament. I've never thought about death and mortality so often in my life. Friends, family who offer help in big and small ways. And I've told many of them that, you know, sometimes in the past, when people were nice to you, you kind of think maybe it's because of your corporate title.
Uh-huh.
Right? Maybe it's because you have something that
they want
or you can offer. But look at me now, I have nothing. I have nothing to offer anyone. But yet people bother to come and sit down. And I like to think that because one of this group is ex-colleagues, and some of them are subordinates.
And they came and maybe
came to see me suffer, I don't know. No, I'm kidding.
You tekan them last time.
Yeah, tekan them. 想不到你也会有今天, right? Revenge. But no, they offered help. One of them even offered to be the chauffeur. She said, I know that your family's quite small and your wife has passed and you don't have a car, so let me know anytime I can send you around. And I asked her, why did you do that? I was so amazed by that offer, that generous offer, right? And I really did not know the officer very well.
Okay.
Anyway, to cut a long story short, she told me that there was something I did for her. I stood up for her in front of our boss. And basically it was something along the lines that it's not her fault, really, it was something else. And for the life of me, I cannot remember at all. But she remembered.
Yes.
Mm. And I would like to think of that as a little bit of my legacy, so to speak. And coming back to the point that really don't leave it until the last minute to start thinking about your legacy, right? Yeah. Each day is a fresh new opportunity to think about how you want to perhaps not leave things, that probably not the most important, leave your possessions, etc., but the relationships that you shape and that you form. It's not too early to think about that, right? Mm. How would you want to be remembered?
Yeah.
And what is the sort of difference that you want to make, not just within your family and loved ones, but to society at large? Yeah. So my older brother is mentally unwell. Mm. And for the longest time, we have had, and this is my fault largely, I think, quite an antagonistic relationship. I didn't like the way that he was, so to speak, ruining or wrecking the lives of my parents, mine, and you know, the kid in me wanted, why can't I just have a normal big brother, right, who looks after me? But instead, he was not the usual contributing elder brother, right? And over the years, it became really bad, the relationship. We couldn't talk because maybe after maybe two sentences, I'll get angry with him and, you know, say something that I will regret later on. And but if I were to look back at the sort of acts of kindness that he did, even at a very, very young age. I remember when I was taking my PSLE. Mm. That's my freshest memory. Mm. I was 12, he was 18. He was 6 years older than me. Mm. He bothered to buy past year PSLE exam questions for me.
Oh, wow.
And it was not my parents who asked him, and he would kind of, you know, be the timekeeper, and then and it wasn't apparent then, but now looking back, I think I owe a lot of my academic accomplishments from PSLE to him. Mm. And that, I think, set me off in a certain trajectory. But of course, I was just blind to all these, right? So after my dad passed away, the relationship actually got worse because his condition worsened. And he caused me problems at the office because he knew who my bosses were and he did things that I think were not so appropriate. But you know how when somebody's mentally unwell, he stops being that person, but he adopts a certain kind of persona, right? But for me, I saw it as he's just the same person, conniving, calculating, so on and so forth, right? I had to manage his affairs for him because he no longer had that capacity. And so I settled him in a nursing home for the mentally unwell. That was a couple of years ago. And I don't know what came over to me. I think there was also a sermon in church about forgiveness, right? That because the Lord forgave you, you also have to forgive all your enemies. And the point about, you know, those closest to you, it's always the hardest, and it could be over some petty little thing that you did. Stole your marbles maybe when you fall, something like that, right? And then never talk to you again. But mine was more jalat lah. It was a lot worse. And I decided that, maybe selfishly, that maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to just forgive him for all the things that he had done unknowingly, unwittingly, as somebody who was grappling with mental illness. And of course, hopefully he would forgive me, lah, right?
Have you asked him?
I did not.
Are you afraid to ask?
No, not really, especially now if I'm dying, right?
So does he know about your condition?
He doesn't, not yet.
Okay.
I haven't visited him as often as I used to do in the past. But I think those visits that I did while I was well, and I'm glad I did that, you know, it was something that I, strangely enough, oddly enough, looked forward to. Because I would like assemble a curated list of snacks, and then I know what he likes. And he's really, by nature, a very gentle person, very kind person. It's just unfortunate that his mental illness makes him into somebody that I don't think he's particularly proud of. So I decided that just confluence, and maybe a moment of epiphany, lah, why don't I just treat him better? You know, hear him out, and don't be that
brother,
right? That prick.
Disgruntled.
Excuse me for the language, but disgruntled, angry, resent, all the sort of traits that are not good to have,
sure.
Especially if. But then I was still well, right?
Yeah.
Especially if your life is coming to an end. Especially. Mm. And why would you want to live life that way, right? Because all are we have limited time. So I decided that I would just be a better person.
Mm.
And he showed that he was the bigger man. Oh. As I wrote in my article, right? I don't remember him dredging up the past to say these were the horrible things that you did and said, and you know, I remember I took him out, I booked him out of his home during Lunar New Year, and I had an umbrella. It was raining, so I was just basically took him out, and then we were walking towards the bus stop to take a bus to my aunt's place or something like that, and it was raining. I was holding the umbrella, and he moved the umbrella closer to me. So ashamed.
Wow, that's beautiful. Yeah. Well, you shouldn't be ashamed. He did what him being a big brother should do. And maybe we refused to see it back then, but now you saw it, right?
So petty, right?
What are things that you would want to have the chance to live? Or maybe, you know, there's a lot like wishing well, last wish. Is there something that you...
Okay, if there are sponsors out there, for my 50th birthday in February, I want to go to the Antarctica.
Antarctica? Wow.
But that was a dream that I...
Have you been?
No, I've never. I've only been to the Arctic.
Oh.
So I thought that, okay, you know, an insurance policy will mature in 50. I'll take some of that money and go to Antarctica. Still as well, right? Live life to the fullest, right?
You know, you can do the... I'll talk to Dean, okay? Dean, maybe do a GoFundMe project, you know? And fund you there.
Business class and above, huh?
Oh, wow. Demanding, this one demanding, okay? Two tickets, please. Two tickets,
disabled, right? Very hard to travel.
Oh, that's true. Oh, yeah. That's true. You probably need that. You have a lot of miles. Maybe miles can throw in.
Don't have.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's
so one. That was one big wish. I thought 50 is such a huge milestone, right? Probably, God willing, will live to see it. Mm. But it doesn't seem physically possible now, right? So pat it down.
Pat it down, okay.
A lot.
Bukit Timah Hill.
No. And for my 50th birthday, I just want to talk, to be able to talk to people whom I've not had the chance to do so and who matter to me a lot.
Yeah.
That's my simple wish.
So, if you have a message for our audience, what would be the message or advice that you have for them?
I wouldn't call it advice, but if there's one lesson I learned, is that you may not have as much time as you thought you had had. You know, you always tend to think I'll have next week, next year, the next Christmas, Lunar New Year, or what have you. There will come a time where it won't hold true anymore. So start right from today. Think about how you'd like to leave your legacy for your loved ones and perhaps for society at large. And we can leave this world a much better one than we found it. That's all.
Thank you so much, Weijin, for this beautiful message. Thank you, Weijin. And there
thank
you go.
Me.
Yeah, this
and
is
thank
another.
You, Dean, for
yes,
making
Dean.
The connection.
All thanks to you. And Dean, go and find sponsors, okay?
Thank you.
Make his 50th birthday. Wow, February, right? February?
He can be the sponsor.
Oh, yeah, he can. Yeah, he's hint. Dean, the sponsor. So there you go. Another episode of Dying to Meet You. And we will see you for the next episode of Dying to Meet You.